G'day mate, how you going? This is Adam O'Brien and welcome to Fandom Podcast Network, here where we enjoy all forms of fandom. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, I bring you Lethal Mullet Podcast, an Australian look at B-grade action films from the 1980s. That's right, going back to that beloved time when we had Chuck Norris on almost every Friday night here in Australia, kicking, punching, and shooting his way to the top, alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the likes of many of the others that came after him, Sylvester Stallone. We even look at some of the heroes you may not know, all here on one fortnightly podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can check it out also on Podbean if you've got the Podbean app. Make sure you check it out. Now, let's get into the episode here on Fandom Podcast Network.
Here on Fandom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast, celebrating everything from the 1980s in action film cinema, all the way from Canon films, all the way through to the Warner Brothers classics that you all know well and true. And who knows, one day we might even do the ultimate classic, Tango and Cash. Hey, Gowan. Well, tonight's episode, we are going to be looking at Jackie Chan films. That's right, here, episode 11 of the show, we're going to have Jedi Schwa of Techno Retro Dads here to talk about Jackie Chan's 80s classics. We're going to be looking at films like Project A. We'll also look at Battle Creek Brawl, all known in America as the Big Brawl. We're also going to be looking at some of the amazing stunts and work that he's done and the sacrifice that he's done for us for entertainment. The one, the only legend, the man himself, Jackie Chan. He is the subject of tonight's podcast. Let's get into it. But before we do that, here's how you can contact us here at the Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, before we get into the episode tonight, here's where you can catch this show and many others like it on Fandom Podcast Network at fpnet.podbean.com, which is our main master feed. You also catch the actual show itself on the Podbean app. It's one of the greatest ways to check out the show. Also, if you like all the shows, you can catch them at all these different places where you can catch podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course, Google Play if you're an Android user. Now, also on social media channels, you can find us on Twitter at FanPod Network. And on Facebook, you can catch us at Fandom Podcast Network's page there at facebook.com/FandomPodcastNetwork. If you want to catch us on the email lines, email any ideas you have that the show might be able to cover, any other films you think that have been fantastic, you can catch us at FandomPodcastNetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host, Adam O'Brien, at obpopculture on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram as well, same handle. And don't forget to catch me on my other show, The Fantha from Down Under, a fortnightly look at Star Wars from Down Under on Fantha Tracks Radio or FanthaTracks.com. And also check out the great shows that I'm doing here on Fandom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, where we look at Mad Max with Maximum Couch Potato, and also our brand new show, The Spicing Guild, looking at the adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune. Now, let's get into the show. All right, you mullet-filled fanatics. That's right, you lethal mullets. Guess what? I got my mate all the way from Colorado. For you guys that are Stephen King fans, you'll know that Colorado plays a big part in The Stand. That's right. Joining me from those humble homes is the one, the only co-host of one of the greatest shows out there. You got to love it because I love it too. It's Techno Retro Dad's co-host, the one, the only artist extraordinaire, Jedi Schwa. How you going, buddy?
Hello, everyone. So, you know, Colorado is also the home of course, the Stanley Hotel.
Which oh, is, wow.
What The Shining is based on, where they filmed that movie too also. So almost had my wedding out there.
Oh wow. Now that was would have been
me and my wife wanted to do. That would have been awesome.
Truly amazing, isn't it? Mate, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you? It is almost springtime for me here in Colorado, mm-hmm. but I guess it's cooling down a little bit for you down there. So,
oh yeah, it certainly is.
I'm looking forward to some good weather, and I think maybe you are too.
We are. We're getting into our autumn, or as you guys call it, fall. So things are falling. They're falling on down there. So what we're starting to see is out here cooler weather, which we've had one of the hottest summers in recorded history out here in Australia, 40 degrees, which is about 110, 115 degrees Fahrenheit.
No, thanks. I'm good. I'll stay in and I'll watch some movies.
I think we all will with that sort of weather. But, of course, you've been doing some amazing work over there at Techno Retro Dads. And, of course, I've got to say, the new animated little gifts we're seeing from your artwork, maybe teasing a bit of maybe animated Techno Retro Dads coming on the way.
Well, I've been playing around with our little logos, making them move a little bit. So when I get a chance, so it's been kind of fun actually. I've had way too much fun lately with that. Actually, I think I'm shirking some of my other responsibilities having fun with that. But yeah, if you check it out, you can see those on Instagram and Twitter, and also, you know, it's always about whatever we're chatting about that week. So it's kind of fun to throw some movement and action in those logos.
Definitely. And folks, you've got to go and check it out. Of course, Techno Retro Dads, not only for that, but for the humor. And it's quite punny. No pun intended. Now, I've got to ask you, are you a Jackie Chan fan?
I adore Jackie Chan. Oh my gosh. Jackie Chan is somebody that I was just slightly familiar with forever, as long as he was doing, you know, movies that we saw here in America. And then as I got a little bit older and more curious to check them out, we would go see some. They would be some that would be released in theaters here. And then a buddy of mine, he and I started getting together every week. We both had little babies at the time, right? My oldest son, he was just an infant at the time, and he had just had his daughter. And we would get together every week when the wives were working, and watch, quote unquote, the babies. But really what we were doing was they would be playing in the corner with each other while we were watching Jackie Chan movies.
Now, I'm the same. I was somebody that I think I saw Drunken Master, I think, was the first one I ever saw.
Oh, mine too.
Oh, yeah. Wow. My goodness. Now, that is a good omen.
Yes. And a good movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the funny thing was, the one I saw was not one that was dubbed. It was the Cantonese print. And, you know, it really, for me, it was, you know, he's like a silent film actor. You know, it was the action. It was the slapstick. It was the way that he uses his body to communicate, which got the comedy across. And it got it so well. And I think the first thing I started doing was doing all those drunken fist moves while I was watching it as a kid, you know? Did you do the same?
Yes. I don't know if I did the moves. I think at that point when I was growing up a little bit, I think I might have been scared I'd hurt something. But but that was what made him so appealing to me, was that you had the karate and the stunts and the action, but then it just every movie that he was in was just filled with humor. You know, it was as if he wasn't taking himself so seriously. And while I really dig watching Bruce Lee movies as well, you know, it's a much different feeling to that. And so I'm much more of a humor guy. You know, I like the comedy and I like to have fun and laugh and stuff. So this was perfect for me.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's chalk and cheese. It's, you look at Bruce Lee's films, which are, of course, were the big thing that shadowed across anyone that was coming after him in that period in the 70s. And it's very much like Sean Connery and Roger Moore. I find that Sean Connery was, you know, yes, back to business. We're going to make this straight up down, pay your taxes and do it right, you know? Like, it was like that feel. Whereas Roger Moore was, well, yes, well, we're going to have a few laughs and, you know, a few Walter PPK jokes. You know, it was in that sort of vein. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you use that comparison, too, because I love Sean Connery, and I love his James Bond movies. I mean, he is like the epitome of James Bond to me. But Roger Moore was where I started as a kid. Live and Let Die was the first James Bond movie that I saw. And so I kind of grew up with Roger Moore. So that kind of James Bond is more fun to me, in which I really love the Daniel Craig James Bond movies as movies, but to me it doesn't feel as much like James Bond as the ones that are a little bit more tongue-in-cheek at times.
I agree. And there's a certain level of humor that even Pierce Brosnan had, and it was a dry wit, and I think he took that from Roger. Roger's delivery was always great.
Yeah, agreed.
And, I mean, getting back to Jackie Chan, Jackie always had that, and I think that goes back to his roots as somebody that was in the Peking Theatre, or basically the drama schools. And it was his, you know, growth through that 10 years from the age of 7 to 17, where he basically, along with Sammo Hung and Yuen Biao and many others that were in those classes, which, I mean, it was not a good experience for them as far as they went through some hell, but they turned out to be some of the funniest and most entertaining actors of their generation.
Yeah. I mean, they had some seriously intense training from what I've read. And I don't know if I could have handled it. I was a much more... I think I was a wussy little kid. I don't think I could have taken what they went through growing up.
But obviously, after doing that, Sammo was the first to break out into Hong Kong films. And it was Sammo being basically the big brother to Jackie at this time. You know, they're a little family, if you like, who really started to get, hey, look, guys, you can actually jump out of this and get into something that you might enjoy. And, of course, Jackie and Yoon, being the younger brothers, went, hey, we could do that.
Yeah, you'll see, if you know anything about his history and the people that he trained with and grew up with, then you'll see that in a lot of his movies, especially early on, they would make appearances, you know, in each other's movies, and as either, you know, friends or the bad guy, or even just the extras around in the big fight scenes. I think, to me, it felt like they trusted each other so much in what they had to do to their bodies that I don't know that they would have chosen anybody else, you know?
Oh, I agree, 100%. And the fact that they knew each other was what helped them get through a lot of those times. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Jackie first moving into films was in the shadow of Bruce Lee's passing. And after End of the Dragon, it was him trying to basically find his own career. And, of course, everyone wanted a very serious actor, very serious martial artist. No humor, everything was about the art itself. But, of course, he's very much influenced by comedy. And it wasn't until he'd been signed by Golden Harvest and did, of course, The Young Master, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I am trying to remember which of Jackie Chan's movies are which. But that that one has that same kind of quality, where he is the sort of the unexpected hero, you know. Those are the kind of Jackie Chan movies I really was drawn toward, I think.
Oh, same here. I think the other thing is, he's done so many films that a lot of the films, I remember them more for not so much the plots, but the action or the stunts that he did. You know, I've looked at films like Project A, where he's in the clock tower and he literally jumps and he holds onto the actual hand of the clock and then literally falls down about three or four floors and almost, he literally hits his head, rolls, and then slams down. And that was, of course, Project A.
Wow. And they also would, you know, do everything. They choreographed everything, obviously, but it was them actually doing it. This was way before we had the capacity to do any kind of CGI work, you know, or things that are physically impossible. These guys were really doing these skills, right? I guess that's another thing that draws me to these older movies so much more, because they have more heart and more charm in their reality, you know, because I know for a fact they could do insane things that I'm seeing on screen because they did them.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, look at, I think it's Jackie Chan's Who Am I, where he literally runs down a glass pane building. forward. I mean, literally forward. And no wires.
No. And you, the other cool thing, at the end of Jackie Chan movies, they'll have, you know, bloopers and mistakes and times that Jackie Chan has been hit harder than I could survive. And he just gets up and does it again. And on that one, wasn't that, I mean, didn't he almost die on that one? I mean, it was a mistake that he could have just plummeted completely off of this building.
That's right. And he's just lucky the angle that he was when he was coming down. I think he just stopped it with the heels of his actual, you know, feet or shoes or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You go back to some of the stunts that he was doing in the start of his career. Now, there's a film that he did in the States to really start himself off. I think it was 1980 called The Big Brawl. Or no, as Battle Creek Brawl as well, depending on where you are in the world. And that, of course, was where he had the master of Mako, or Mako, from Conan as his teacher.
Yeah, it's been forever since I saw that one, but I do remember that one. And I remember looking at that guy, he kind of looks like someone I've seen. I didn't see it when it came out. What was that, 1980, I think?
That's right.
It was far back in that. He looked familiar, and then, you know, it was years later that I realized, yeah, that was Jackie Chan.
It was.
And then, of course, I saw him in another American movie that I did remember him for, and that was Cannonball Run.
Oh, yeah, Cannonball Run. Now, did he also do the sequel? I can't remember if he did number two or just did the first one.
I can't remember if he's in the second one either. He might have been.
And you know what's funny is, in Australia, the only one that's available, and it's only on Blu-ray, is Cannonball Run 2.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, I don't know why. It never made it to me why we don't have the first one available as well. Of course, with you know, the entire cast that's there, Roger Moore as well. Roger Moore, you know. But the other one was The Protector with Danny Aiello, if I remember right, too, that, you know, did a more serious role for Jackie. But still, again, he was freaking out the directors on both those movies because he said, I'm going to go up to the top of this building and I'm going to do it without wires. And I'm going to walk across these buildings, no wires. And, of course, no insurance company's going to touch him.
No. No, yeah, especially these days, they're very serious about that. But this is a different time.
That's brilliant. Now, he's even done, a few years after it, about in 83, Armor of God, which was almost like Indiana Jones with him in Italy. And just some of the great little trademarks started with Armor of God, where, of course, he got the company from Japan, Mitsubishi, to come along and literally sponsor him. So he got brand new Mitsubishi cars and stuff like that in almost every movie.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Now, in Cannonball Run, he played he was in Cannonball Run 2. He played a Mitsubishi engineer,
which is
funny. He's not Japanese, so he's Chinese, but...
Brilliant. But the other ones, the series of movies that were a big influence on Sylvester Stallone was, of course, Police Story. Now, a lot of people remember Police Story for the amazing stunts, especially the one where he has a bus literally stopped right in front of him on the hard brake, and you have the two criminals literally burst through the windscreen and land in front of him, and he's basically holding them and goes, you're under arrest. Now, that scene is literally blow for blow in Tango and Cash.
Oh, really?
Right at the start, yep, with the tango.
Oh, wow.
Where you have the Conan-like character, the big jaw, and you have Ray Tango smashing up the street with his car, pulls out in front of them, steps out, has his revolver ready, takes a shot at the radiator of the actual truck itself, and it stops on a dime in front, and the Conan fella jumps out and goes, you're under arrest. Hey, yo, Mickey. So, you know, you can start to see the influence that he has. But, of course, I think he didn't really hit the huge time overseas until we got Shanghai Noon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was, you know what, like I was telling you about my buddy who we used to have the little marathons with, you know, while we were watching the kids. When that movie came out, we made like a night of it, like at the premiere, you know, we made a big deal and went to go see Shanghai Noon because, I mean, it was more that Jackie Chan was in it than anything else about it, but it ended up being such a fun movie, and I think that was, I mean, he's had a long history of being in movies in America and, you know, here and there, but to me that felt like kind of a resurgence of Jackie Chan love.
Oh, without a doubt. And of course the other one being with Chris Tucker, the one, the only Rush Hour, which are just feel good movies. You can put those on at any time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're just fun and silly and funny. And, you know, Jackie Chan actually plays more of the straight guy in those movies. But his stunts and his action and his demeanor in that, is almost more fun than, you know, the comedic roles that Owen Wilson and Chris Tucker played.
Especially when he's delivering lines like, so what's your name? What's your cowboy name? He goes, Chon Wang. Who? Chon Wang. You know, and of course, playing on the name of John Wayne. Oh, that's a terrible cowboy name. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that, you know, he's able to play it so straight is what, the deadpan style of humor is what makes him such a great guy. And the great news is that he's currently at work with Chris Tucker on Rush Hour 4.
Oh, I did not know that. That's exciting.
So that's only around the corner, folks. That's actually going to be happening. So, you're actually going to see it. Yeah,
that's incredible. I mean, he looks fantastic. He's been acting forever, and I'm telling you, man, he can move now more than I can at my age. You know, and so he's a very fit man and a very talented actor.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, the last film I saw him in was called The Foreigner with Pierce Brosnan, and it was a much more serious film. It was basically one where he is, without a doubt, a character which has been haunted by the death of his daughter, and he is basically a special forces soldier. And so he goes after those that he thinks have basically done the crime. And it's a very interesting movie. Again, great to see that he's still doing all the action and stuff like this. But again, a more serious side to Jackie.
I haven't seen that one. I've heard it was really good, though.
Definitely, definitely. But out of his different films, what is the one for you that you've enjoyed, that you've seen the most?
Oh, man. Well, I have a special place in my heart for different areas. You know, the American ones, the Rush Hour and the... what was the other one we were just talking about? Shanghai Noon. You know, those I had such fun experiences with. But all of his classic ones that were dubbed in English, you know, that we used to watch together, the Police Story you mentioned, 1 and 2, Fire Dragon, Young Tiger, Fantasy Mission Force, all of those, the ones that we used to watch together, I think those probably, to me, are pure Jackie Chan, the ones that are the dearest to my heart, just because of how I experienced them and how much fun they were.
Oh, without a doubt. For me, I'd have to go back to probably Project A and Project A Part 2 and probably Armor of God, because just the amount of artistry involved, and I think Project A was the one that really pushed him, not just in local circles in Hong Kong, but pushed him into international stardom.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, he's got such a long list of amazing roles, and the guy has had a brilliant career, you know, and he's legendary. And I think he didn't start off thinking of himself as someone that could achieve that kind of status, you know. I mean, he saw other people that came before him that were so big around the world that I think it felt to me as if he was much more humble at the beginning of his career, and he just sort of kept that demeanor, which is something that appeals to me when I'm watching an actor.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Just to change subject just very, very quickly, we've also got an amazing new, I would say, box set out here in Australia, which is only cheap. It's only about $30 Australian. And that is, of course, Space 1999. And wow. Now, I've only ever seen sporadically episodes here and there of the show. So I knew of the show, knew of it kind of well, but now I get to see it in all its glory. And yeah, I'm a big Gerry Anderson fan, so I love what he's done with UFO and many other series in the past. But I tell you what, this is the be-all and end-all with the Eagle and all.
Yeah, we talked about that on Techno Retro Dads. Oh, man, it's been probably a year or more now. And going back and revisiting the series, putting yourself in the place, and really, honestly, it's before Star Wars. And so you have to put yourself there and really understand and appreciate what came before movies like Star Wars and everything after that that brought us here. Because it was shows like Space 1999 that really laid the groundwork for some of the stuff we see today. And I don't know where it would have gone if we didn't have things like this. It was a really cool series to watch.
Definitely. And I love the fact that, you know, it was a fairly big budget for the time. You know, and it was shot in Pinewood. And the fact that, you know, okay, Star Wars done at Elstree. But when you think about it, now it is made where this one was.
Really?
Well, Star Wars is now shot in Pinewood.
Yeah. So that's I didn't realize that Space 1999 was.
Pretty sure, from what I've seen of the credits that were rolling up on the DVD.
Wow.
Pretty sure it's Pinewood, man. So
I love imagining. It's probably far off. I'm sure it's not like this, but I love imagining that, you know, things when they get filmed in the same place, every once in a while, one little piece gets left behind, and so they just kind of throw it in whatever they're working on now. It's fun to think that something from Space 1999, like, maybe is inadvertently in the background of a Star Wars scene.
If you could reboot Space 1999 and maybe make it Space 2099, what would you do? Who would you cast in the series?
Oh, man, that is a good question. You know what? You watch it back then and, again, kind of appreciate what the 70s were, right? And you see it's a lot of young, pretty people, right? You know, they do that. They do that on all the CW shows here. But I would do that. You know, I would kind of get some big up-and-coming stars, you know, that are recognizable but not super hit, super stars yet. But then I would put at least one well-known kind of mentor figure, you know, in there, just an older character who could lead the cast. So it's not just young, pretty people. But that would be really cool if they thought of something like that. 2099, though, I'm trying to think if that would be far enough in the future for this to be believable. You might want to go 2199, maybe.
Maybe 2199. And we'll throw a name in there. We'll throw Christopher Waltz.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see he talented actor, and I could him being playing an important role in there.
Because, you know, the difference between him and, say, Sean Connery in his prime, if he was the lead of this, you know, Sean would be like, yeah, get the Eagle up there, get it flying, let's go to the moon. And that would be it. It'd be on the, in the, you know, if it was Christoph Waltz, of course, he has to describe what it is we are going to be doing here and now. Look, Eagle has legs on it, has a little egg shape, oh, that's lovely. And look, you got all these cargo pods. You could put many things on. And then by the time
you want somebody like that. You don't want somebody. Connery's a little bit too powerful, you know, that kind of character, because you know he's going to get it done.
Yeah, right? It's going to get done.
You want somebody who's smart, but they are aware of the danger. You know, they're aware that it might not work or something like that. So you got to have that sense of dread in there a little bit.
And you can't have Russell Crowe, because if it was Russell Crowe, it'd be too much worrying about, am I young? What are you doing? Oh, you need to go to the moon. I've got rugby to play, mate. I'm going to go down to 40. Yeah. Then we're going to the pub. After the pub, I don't know what I'm going to... Oh, no, I'm going to go... the missus wants me to go over and feed the kids first. Oh, okay. You know, and that's the thing, is you'll never get to actually get into the moon.
Yeah, agreed.
But a great series and something I'm really enjoying getting back into. But I've got to say, one of the ones that's not getting enough love, and let's just hope one day we finally get a bit of a sequel or something, or at least a live action, that is, of course, Robotech.
Oh, yeah.
which
that'd be great.
Yeah, they are doing a number of things. They've got a live action film on the way. I think it's a lot of it's being just tied up in copyright and who owns what. There's all this sort of stuff, but we really need to see Rick Hunter and friends on the big screen.
Yeah, I believe it's going to happen eventually. Unfortunately, you know, these days it seems like legal issues make these passion projects take so much longer to get done.
Oh yeah.
But that has such a gigantic following around the world that I can't imagine that it won't eventually get made. Whether it's, you know, in this country or not, I don't know. But I think somebody will do it justice.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. Now, of course, you are the co-host of many a different podcast. Of course, the main one being it is Techno Retro Dads. But tell the listeners here at Lethal Mullet Podcast where they can find you, listen to your shows, and, of course, check out those amazing, amazing sites.
Well, thank you very much for all those kind words. Well, of course, we mentioned Techno Retro Dads, where I talked with my buddy Shaz Bazaar about all the things we grew up with and, you know, how we revisit them today, share them with our kids and just have fun with those. And then I have three other shows that are based on superhero TV shows. We have Scarlet Velocity, where my friend Jay and I talk about the TV show Flash. We have Green Justice, where we talk about TV show Arrow, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, where we talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we're very excited is coming back here in the States in May, so can't wait to revisit that. So, and you can find all of those shows in iTunes, of course, and then over at retrozap.com. So, hey, if you're interested in any of that stuff, we would love to have you guys come over and have fun with us. We love hearing from other people and hearing what your memories of any of those things are.
Oh, without a doubt. You got to go and check it out. And folks, do definitely subscribe to Techno Retro Dads. You're going to get not only a lot of fun, a lot of info on all these great shows and different franchises that we enjoyed in our youth, but also you're just going to be entertained because these guys will give you a very punny time. So big thanks to Jedi Schwa for being on the show today, pal. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me. It was great fun.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. Also, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we discuss all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating the cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. The End Zone, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast, if you're a hard rock music fan, the Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, as we discuss all things Doctor Who, past and present. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Master Feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network. And on Twitter, at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and support the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.